Radio from South Central Indiana.
Welcome to WFHB's Daily Local News.
Written and produced entirely by volunteers from the Bloomington community and supported by the generosity of listeners like you.
Good afternoon from the studios of Community Radio 91.3 FM, reporting live for WFHB. This is Carolyn Vandeweel, and this is the Daily Local News for Thursday, September 19th, 2019. Coming up in the next half hour, we'll hear about a few of the energy and environmental rules being rolled back by the Trump administration. That's a special presentation from the Indiana Environmental Reporter. Also, on our weekly public opinion feature, Voices in the Street, we'll hear from those who are experiencing homelessness in our community. That's all coming up later in the program, but first, your daily headlines. Indiana Attorney General Curtis Hill has joined more than 20 U.S. Attorneys General who are backing a proposed multi-billion dollar settlement with Purdue Pharma. The company makes the opioid pain medication, OxyContin. The Indianapolis Business Journal reports the settlement would make $10 to $12 billion available to local governments as reparation for damages associated with the opioid epidemic. However, Steve Miller, who chairs Purdue Pharma's board of directors, has told the Associated Press the family-owned company is not admitting any wrongdoing. Several states are rebuffing the proposed settlement. Pennsylvania Attorney General Josh Shapiro has said the deal is, quote, a slap in the face to everyone who has had to bury a loved one due to this family's destruction and greed. In Bloomington, the Center for Recovery, a private drug and alcohol rehab clinic, is looking to expand. The center's use variance request comes before the Bloomington Board of Zoning Appeals tonight. The center operates out of what it refers to as a campus comprised of three locations on First Street and one facility on Walker Street. Some of the center's neighbors have complained to city officials that its clients can be noisy and disruptive, but according to the Herald Times, the city's recommendation says that in order to get approval, the center only needs to address landscaping and bicycle parking requirements. The Board of Zoning Appeals meets tonight at 5:30 p.m. at City Hall. Monroe County residents who are on the City of Bloomington sewer system will pay 12% more for sewer service next year. County sewer customers could find the rate hike costing them an extra $5. By contrast, sewer customers within the city limits will see a monthly increase of about a dollar. The Bloomington City Council approved the increase last night. The council also approved waiving the city's hefty new connection fee for residents switching from septic systems to city sewer. New connection fees can run more than $1,000, not including the cost of any excavation needed. Reporting live for WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. And support for WFHB is provided by attorneys Eric Slotograff and Ben Neoff. Slotograff Neoff is located at 200 East 3rd Street in downtown Bloomington, assisting families and small businesses in meeting the legal challenges of life, providing estate planning and wills, as well as family law services. More information is available at 812-332-6000 or online at slotografflegal.com. Slotograff Neoff, law for business, community, and life. And up next, the Indiana Environmental Reporter.
The Trump administration is taking on regulations.
It's keeping inefficient and inadequate technology out in the marketplace. Ultimately, the environment's going to pay. We're going to have more emissions because of this.
The Department of Energy finalized a rule that will stop Obama-era efficiency standards for light bulbs from taking effect early next year. How will this affect consumers? We'll take a look. Plus,
the EPA is using a legal argument to tie its hands and have a reason to not be able to regulate a pollutant that is associated with climate change, and this administration making it clearer and clearer day by day by day that they are not motivated in any way to address climate change pollutants.
Carbon dioxide is the big bad greenhouse gas everyone knows, but a close number two is methane. It's at least 25 times more potent at trapping heat than carbon dioxide, and the EPA is rolling back rules regulating methane emissions. We'll see how the proposal could make a bad situation worse. I'm Enrique Sainz, and this is On Air with IER. That could prevent households across the country from saving billions of dollars in energy costs. The Department of Energy finalized a rule that prevents Obama-era efficiency standards for light bulbs from taking effect early next year. The Obama-era efficiency standard, set to take effect on January 1, 2020, sought to establish stricter energy efficiency regulations for some light bulbs. That included a 45 lumen per watt minimum efficiency for incandescent light bulbs and higher efficiencies for LED and compact fluorescent light bulbs. By some estimates, the proposal could have saved individual households about $90 annually and reduced carbon dioxide emissions by 52 million metric tons. Carbon dioxide is a greenhouse gas that helps trap heat in the atmosphere. It's a main driver of climate change. I spoke to Jennifer Washburn about the new rule. Jennifer is Counsel on Energy and Environment for the Citizens Action Coalition, a public policy advocacy group based in Indianapolis.
You know, on a micro level, the Trump administration is hurting consumers. But at a macro level, when we're looking at the system-wide cost and benefit of using less energy, he's making it so that we're going to have to be relying more from our power plants and producing more emissions. So it's just a shame that he's being so short-sighted, and it's unclear as to what this is responding to.
The standards fulfilled a requirement put in place by a 2007 law that would, among other regulations, ensure that light bulbs would meet the minimum efficacy standard of 45 lumens per watt by 2020. That's about 25% more efficient than average light bulbs now. The standards were introduced just a day before then-President-elect Donald Trump was set to take office. The rule was intended to fulfill that legal requirement. This is Jenna McCabe, director of the Environmental Resilience Institute at Indiana University.
Lighting is a huge driver of greenhouse gas emissions in this country, huge. And so we can make a big difference in terms of climate change pollution if we get more efficient in how we light our buildings.
According to the Department of Energy, in 2018, the U.S. consumed 101.3 quadrillion British thermal units of energy, more than ever before. About 21% of that was due to residential use. Nearly half of residential energy consumption, or 9.75 quadrillion BTU, is energy produced but lost during generation, transmission, and distribution. That means companies must produce twice the amount of energy that will be used in order to meet demand. More efficient light bulbs would reduce the amount of energy production required for residential use.
Inefficient and inadequate technology out in the marketplace. And now they're just going to prolong the inevitable and make it so the customers end up paying more on their bills rather than letting this new technology take hold.
The Energy Department's rollback already faces legal scrutiny. The National Resources Defense Council, an environmental advocacy group, says the rollback is illegal because it violates anti-backsliding provisions of existing law that prevents the department from weakening existing standards. In comments to the Department of Energy, the attorneys general of 15 states also said the Department of Energy would be violating the anti-backsliding provisions and added that the Trump administration would be violating the 2000 law that set the 2020 deadline. The light bulb standard rollback is the latest attempt by the Trump administration to roll back efficiency standards. The Trump administration has also attempted to roll back efficiency standards for consumer products ranging from toasters to refrigerators. The Department of Energy currently determines how companies test products for energy efficiency, energy use, or estimated annual operating cost. But under the proposed 2019 Energy Conservation Program for Appliance Standards, companies would be able to develop their own methods of testing for consumer products and submit their preferred testing procedure. If the Department of Energy does not respond to the company's proposal within 30 days, they are allowed to operate using their testing procedure, no matter what it is, for up to 180 days. Critics say the loophole could allow companies to claim their consumer products are more energy efficient than they actually are.
Ultimately, the environment's going to pay. We're going to have more emissions because of this. There's uncertainty in the marketplace, which businesses and manufacturers certainly do not appreciate.
Even though the government seems dead set on eliminating minimums on how efficient technology should be, it doesn't mean consumers can't shop smartly to save money and the environment.
We would certainly encourage consumers to continue to buy LED bulbs, they will provide immediate impact on bills. This month we're paying for electricity consumed 1 or 2 months beforehand, but within a couple months you're going to go ahead and see bill savings. So we would certainly encourage consumers to continue to make the right decision. These LED light bulbs have really come down in cost, and the payback is just enormous for consumers to go ahead and make that plunge. We would also encourage consumers to participate in utility-sponsored demand-side management energy efficiency programs. You know, Duke Energy, Indianapolis Power and Light, NIPSCO, I&M, Vectren, they all have energy efficiency programs that ratepayers fund, and because it is our least cost resource, we would strongly encourage consumers to continue to take that initiative to participate in the utility energy efficiency programs, and they will inevitably see the benefit of that on their bills.
Coming up, we'll hear how a new EPA proposal could eliminate restrictions on methane emissions. But first, we'll take a look at how scientists around the globe are changing the world and protecting the environment. A recent study of ocean sediment collected near Santa Barbara, California, has found that the presence of plastic in the sedimentary record has increased drastically since 1945. The study, which sourced its data from a sediment core that dates back to 1834, found that as plastic use increased following World War II, more plastic microfibers were traceable on the ocean floor. Researchers described the presence of these microplastics as a plastic footprint within the soil. The researchers behind the study believe this could serve as a new geological marker, denoting a new era known as the Great Acceleration. Although more samples will need to be taken in order to determine if the presence of this plastics is a global phenomenon, the team intends to conduct further studies in the future to confirm their findings. A team of scientists from the National Institute of Technology at Mexico's University of Veracruz have discovered 310 miles of coral reefs in the Gulf of Mexico. The reef's importance lies in their biological productivity. The reefs are positioned in the formation known as a reef corridor, creating a diverse ecosystem that includes animals like sharks, sea turtles, and crustaceans. 5 total reefs make up the total distance of the corridor. In previous years, scientists have theorized that the corridor like this one might exist, but this is the first time it has been confirmed. Because the corridor was previously undiscovered, it is not currently protected. Scientists responsible for the discovery hope to secure protections for the reef in order to protect it from the oil and gas industry, which have the potential to move into the area. Currently, the reefs are also being threatened by the fishing industry, which profits off the area's biodiversity. Scientists are aware of the importance of implementing protections for the reefs that don't impede on the livelihoods of the nearby fishermen. In order to secure protections, the scientists are currently working with the Mexican Center for Environmental Law. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency announced it would roll back methane emissions rules and modify national performance standards for the oil and gas industry. Greenhouse gases are believed to be a major reason our climate is changing. Unless you just wholeheartedly refuse to hear the truth, the science is pretty clear. Fluorinated gases, nitrous oxide, methane, and carbon dioxide are the 4 horsemen of a man-made apocalypse. Those 4 greenhouse gases trap heat in the atmosphere and make the Earth hotter, kicking off a chain reaction that results in a climate change. These 4 greenhouse gases are emitted by technology powered by fossil fuels. In the past, presidents and their administrations have worked to make fossil fuels more efficient and reduce emissions of toxic and dangerous pollutants. The current administration announced it would roll back methane emissions rules and modify national performance standards for the oil and gas industry. The EPA expects companies, including some in Indiana, will save tens of millions of dollars every year by deregulating the transmission and storage of oil and gas and removing emissions limits for methane, a primary component of natural gas. EPA Administrator Andrew Wheeler said the Trump administration recognizes that methane is valuable. The industry then has an incentive to minimize leaks and maximize its use. Wheeler says natural gas production has doubled in the U.S. since 1990, while methane emissions across the natural gas industry have fallen by nearly 15%. He said regulations should not stifle this innovation and progress. Methane is more than 25 times more potent at trapping heat than carbon dioxide, and it makes up about 10.2% of all greenhouse gas emissions from human activities in the U.S. Critics of the rule say the EPA's aim may not be to encourage innovation, but to set the legal groundwork so that it has less power to regulate greenhouse gas emissions. That would be a huge boon to the oil and gas industry. Janet McCabe served as acting assistant administrator for the EPA's Office of Air and Radiation during the Obama administration. This is her announcing the methane emissions regulations back in 2015.
We are proposing today the following actions. First, we are proposing to update our existing standards from 2012 to include the first national requirements to reduce methane. These actions are completely in line with the President's energy strategy, which clearly recognizes that domestic natural gas production provides abundant clean energy that powers and heats homes and businesses across the country. And they also recognize that this valuable resource must be developed responsibly and safely.
We're now in the third year of a different administration, and Janet is currently the director of the Environmental Resilience Institute at Indiana University.
EPA is taking the position that the previous administration interpreted the law incorrectly and that it doesn't have the legal authority under the Clean Air Act to regulate methane specifically. Clearly, there are many people that disagree with that as a matter of law. But what it means is that EPA is using a legal argument to tie its hands and have a reason to not be able to regulate a pollutant that is associated with climate change.
Methane occurs naturally in the environment. The gas is emitted from livestock and through other agricultural practices. It is also emitted by natural wetlands and through the decay of organic waste and solid waste landfills. But according to the EPA itself, more than half of all methane in the U.S. is emitted from the production, processing, storage, transmission, and distribution of natural gas, and the production, refinement, transportation, and storage of crude oil.
Oil and gas development has a lot of different pieces along the way, right? There's getting it out of the ground to begin with, and then you put it through pipelines, and you process it, and you move it around. And so there's lots and lots of opportunities for leakage of different air pollutants. And the air pollutants that are emitted from these activities include methane, which is the kind of the poster child of this recent proposal.
While coal is still king in Indiana, natural gas is becoming more widely used in the state. The state of Indiana produces about 6.2 trillion BTUs of natural gas yearly, but consumes about 120 times that amount, about 748 trillion BTU a year. Three-fifths of the state's households depend on natural gas for home heating. Several utility companies in Indiana, including Northern Indiana Public Service Company, also known as NIPSCO, and Indianapolis Power and Light, or IPL, have begun transitioning at least some of their coal-fired power plants to natural gas. More widespread use of natural gas means more opportunities for methane leakage, but emissions rules put in place during the Obama administration actually decreased the amount of methane emissions detected. According to EPA greenhouse gas data, 6.6 million metric tons of methane were reported in Indiana in 2015. Methane emissions numbers fell the two following years after the implementation of new rules. EPA data shows 5.94 million metric tons of methane were reported in 2016 and 5.86 million metric tons of methane emissions were reported in 2017. The EPA's new proposal would mean methane levels would be likely to increase in the state and across the country.
Methane is about 25 times more potent a global warming pollutant than carbon dioxide. So even if the amounts emitted are less, it can have an extremely significant effect. So we're in a situation where we're already seeing the effects of climate change in Indiana. We're seeing warmer temperatures, we're seeing stronger storms, we're seeing more flooding. Every bit of a greenhouse gas that goes into the atmosphere is a bit that will contribute to the continued development of these kinds of changes to our climate and the impacts that that's having on the economy. So now is the time to be reducing these emissions as much as we can reasonably do.
Climate change has happened naturally throughout the Earth's history. According to NASA, there have been seven cycles of glacial advance and retreat within the last 650,000 years. But the rate at which our climate has changed since the mid-20th century has led a vast majority of scientists to believe our current warming trend is extremely likely to be caused by human activity. More than 100 experts from about 50 public and private organizations in Indiana work together to see if and how climate change has affected the state. The Indiana Climate Change Impacts Assessment researchers compiled several reports detailing how climate change affects state and local interests. They found that in the last century, the temperature in Indiana has warmed by 1.2 degrees Fahrenheit and is expected to rise about 5 more degrees by the mid-21st century. Climate change is also affecting precipitation levels, air quality, growing seasons, and many other aspects of Indiana life. Increased methane emissions could help make the effects of climate change even worse.
This administration is making it clearer and clearer day by day by day that they are not motivated in any way to address climate change pollutants.
The Trump administration has tried to fight methane emissions rules since its early days. In 2017, administration officials attempted to delay the implementation of a rule that limited methane emissions from oil and natural gas operations on private land for 2 years. The EPA also concurrently withdrew a 2015 request that oil and gas producers report data on their methane emissions. That means methane emissions levels will no longer be accurately tracked. Several environmental advocacy groups said they would launch legal challenges to the Trump administration's latest proposal. Members of the public will also be able to comment on the proposal for 60 days as soon as it's printed in the Federal Register. That's all for this edition of On Air with IER. Check out our website, IndianaEnvironmentalReporter.org, for environmental stories and more. On Air with IER is produced by independent journalists and producers based at the Media School at Indiana University, as well as by student interns. Producers are employees of the Media School and the Environmental Resilience Institute at IU.
Support for the Daily Local News comes from MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. Found locally at 812-334-4003 and on the web at mpisolarenergy.com. And up next, our weekly public opinion segment, Voices in the Street.
Welcome to Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion feature. Voices in the Street provides an opportunity for people in our community to share their opinions and perspectives on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents.
This week on Voices in the Street, we focus on a handful of interviews with folks experiencing homelessness in Bloomington. We were asking what residents thought about the parks in town and about the forthcoming $25 million Switchyard Park. For some, this question brought out stories of hardship and of a life without permanent housing.
I'm Chris. I've lived in Bloomington 54 years. Anyway, I'm homeless right now. So, I mean, I'm sure that with all that, with one of those millions, they could have addressed the homeless issue or something a little more, because I don't know if they're going to make a park. Now they're going to have to maintain that, and the homeless are going to go there and no one to sleep too, and it's just going to be a bigger thing and more things to... Anyway, yeah, a big problem. They need to start addressing these things before it gets even bigger and bigger. Something's going to have to be dealt with. I mean, the police have been they've been nice about it. You can't be here after some certain time, and that's fine, and I don't try to be. But I sit most of my time, I got to be on somebody's property, since I don't have any. You know, so I sit on city property. I've been a resident here all my life, and I buy things. I still have money. I get a check every month, and I spend money in this town, you know. I mean, as much mine as it is anyone else's. As much as they look down their nose at me, people do, but I can tell you one thing. In the last 3 years, this city has changed so drastically with the introduction of methamphetamine on the streets of Bloomington. It's treacherous out here. It's carrying knife. Yeah, and I've been in prison 4 times, and I'm still scared to be out here at night. And the police are no help. And they're just going to let us keep doing this, or kill ourselves with the dope or kill each other, and they make their money still. Boom, there you go. Problem solved.
I work every day. Right now I know what for. I'm a 1 month and a half because I'm half blind. This eyes is shut down and I cannot see anything. I hear 80% of that.
He's already had 2 surgeries.
Yeah, I had 2 surgeries and I had to go in there. Somebody help me? No. Mm-mm. The police come nighttime and I'm asleep because I don't have place to go. They say, you have to go. And I have to go. When it rain, 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning rain, where did you go?
Because they said that the mayor and the citizens are complaining. And I don't know what the reason of that is, but at 11 o'clock at night, I think if you're just... you're not causing a problem, that they should just go ahead and let you sleep there if you have to, you know, under a lighted area where you can be seen so they know you're safe. They don't even, sometimes they don't even, like people, I've seen people walk right up and hit people down here, and they try to file a police report, and the police does nothing about it. They just don't do anything about it. We're up here by ourselves, really, you know? Why do we need all these apartments that nobody can afford? I don't understand that. Oh, students, students, students. That's what they're thinking about. That's it. That's all they care about, the students. They should care about the citizens of Bloomington.
We got something to offer. We didn't get here by accident. It might have been by some of our own doing. But, I mean, you could be here faster than you know it. And walk a mile in my shoes, and then you might see where I'm coming from. What they're doing to the homeless as one is just wrong. It's just wrong.
This has been Voices in the Street, WFHB's weekly public opinion segment, featuring candid commentary from your friends and neighbors on the issues and events that matter most to Bloomington residents. Voices in the Street is a volunteer-powered production of our News and Public Affairs Department here on WFHB 91.3 and 98.1 FM, community radio for South Central Indiana.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB. Today's headlines were written by Sarah Vaughn. Voices in the Street was produced by Evan Capelli. Our engineer today is Kevin Oliver, and our theme music provided by Ben Lumsdaine, Scott Schmadke, and Daddy Graff. For WFHB, I'm Carolyn Vandeweel. Stay tuned for Big Talk with Michael Glapp, a WFHB news and public affairs program highlighting the issues, events, and people in South Central Indiana. That's coming up next here on WFHB.
You've been listening to the Daily Local News on WFHB Bloomington Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a Daily Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. You can find an archive of past shows and individual news reports online at wfhb.org and catch live broadcasts of the Daily Local News Monday through Thursday at 5 p.m. We are local, longer.